the point where you were talking about the invitation that you received to go to UCLA. That's where we quit.
See, I'm here. I forgot. That was the 20 things we touched on after that.
I think you were... You mentioned coming back from there, and I asked you whether you went to RPI.
Right.
And you went back to the construction fund.
I said no.
You said no.
Is this funny now?
Yes, it's funny now.
I said no, that I was asked to come back to head up, by the governor, to head up the Pure Waters Authority.
That's right.
Which was the environmental thing. And that they had also started the Council on Architecture, which was a spin-off of the Council on the Arts, which was later folded back in to both Council on the Arts and the Office for Local Government. So that all of the discussion of the selection of architects is skipped there.
Now, can you go back to that, the discussion of how the architects were selected? Remember, I mentioned Roth, Kelly Grusin, Benares, Pokorny, and Weigel. You mentioned Goldberg from
Chicago,
for the
medical science, health science.
Yes, for health science, that's right.
I said that I had said at some point that the selection of architects had been previously largely from architects recommended by the local political leaders, assemblymen or others, and to the state and to the commissioner of works, and that those recommendations were distributed according to that approach. The contacts given to those earlier ones were very limited. They did schematics. I mean, they really didn't play much of a role. The working drawings and all that was done by the Public Works Department. So we knew that the architects, the good architects, would only want to take this work if they had full professional contacts. And we felt that the work was important enough to do that, and that the construction fund would be able to bring better quality of work from those people if that was the contractual arrangement as well. So that we began...
You could bypass some of the red tape.
We could bypass the red tape, which was to clear out a negative, but the positive side was that we could have a direct relationship to professionals working on it who were able to do better work than those in the bureaucratic levels of architectural activity. We had also established to ourselves the fact that we should contract with firms, or groups of teams of firms, who were large enough to have the planning capacity as well as the architecture, that they'd be able to look at the our requirement, looking at the region, looking at the relationship of this to its community, looking to the parallel planning that was going on and so forth, and that they would then be able to carry on and to handle the first key buildings, to set the architectural style and atmosphere and carry that out.
We're talking about ultimately design vocabulary.
And therefore, one of the tools that we developed for that was the design vocabulary. We had developed quite a thorough methodology, which was advanced for that time. It's been adopted by a lot of campus planning and campus planning techniques and writing since that time.
You know what Larson and Larson?
Yes.
Firm?
Yeah.
They were in the Georgian style.
Right. Yeah.
Wake Forest, also Bucknell and Kobe.
We were approached by many, many firms, and we approached other firms, which we thought were at the top of the list. And I told you, I guess it was on the, I thought we missed, that I actually requested the invitation, and they were glad to invite me to the State Association of Architects annual convention. And I spoke there about what our basis was. I said I realized that this would be giving fewer total number of contracts if we gave three or four or five of the key buildings to the same firm that would do the planning, instead of giving three or four or five to three or four or five different architects in the region. I said, nevertheless, the reason for it, which I've just explained, and next year, the construction, or sometime almost immediately thereafter, the construction fund was named by the State Association of Architects as the client of the year.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, very good.
So that this was underwritten that way.
How did this affect Stony Brook? You had a number of architects. Maurice Walker lost out somehow.
Maurice Walker made their proposal of how they would continue the work and how they would organize their office to do that, including a meeting in which they introduced a new member of their office. I remember it very well. And feeling that he and his work in the past with some other firms out of the city would add the new quality that they wanted. But it wasn't, to my mind, convincing.
Well,
and
I think Steve was at that meeting and at some meeting, yeah, in which he looked at some drawings and decided it was the same stuff that they had been having, which he didn't like, and he just said that they weren't going to have anything further to do with it.
He backed us up on that. He was not, at that point, he had a voice, we were always consulting with him as to what we were planning to do, but it was not his responsibility any longer.
Okay.
And to be specific, I mean, he did not have either a vote, you might say, in the selection, nor did he have any kind of a veto on the site. This was entirely our responsibility. And
this was after 62?
Well, when the construction fund started. As soon as that legislation went through, it was our responsibility and authority to do it. And that was in my hands, with using and trying to keep everybody. I went over these things with Steve constantly, and as soon as Agnolfi came in, he brought in a lot of knowledge about who were the good architects and how to arrange the work well with them, and was very innovative in developing new techniques and methods, as I explained to you earlier. So, with all the different interviews and with talking with Tony and Steve, and sometimes I'd review some of them with Harrison, but he wasn't too familiar with many of the other firms. We got to know, I visited offices and so forth, and I'd always try to find a firm or group of firms which would be both a very high quality, would be open in their outlook. They wouldn't come in with a lot of baggage of previous buildings they felt were right and had to be justified by doing more of the same, and yet who combined these abilities with some planning talent or associated with a planning firm, they could do that. I remember, for example, when Buffalo was coming along, the new campus at Amherst.
Yeah.
We made it, incidentally, we made a extensive study of where the old University of Buffalo should go, I mean, how it should go.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it should go right where it was, some other sites we studied in detail. I think there were a total of five sites, mm-hmm. including Amherst.
Mm-hmm.
Vincent Moore, who is still active here in the city, mm-hmm. who Larry Hyde associates now, He was recently, for some years, the director of the Adirondack Park Agency. He's the one that made that study for us. He had been a director of one of the officers of the Environmental Facilities Corporation, which is the Pure Waters Authority that I hate. And so, in that case in Buffalo, I might use as an example, Skidmore, Owings & Merrill, one of the leading firms in the country, in the world, had not wanted to get into the state work much. We had not seen the right opportunity for a firm of that standing and of that size and of that scope, had their planning people and so forth, until the new campus at Amherst came along. And their chief designer was Gordon Blumshaft. He was the architect who was given the main credit for much of Letterhouse, one of the landmark buildings on Park Avenue that he did. And he was given credit for some of the leading SOM work in the area. So Gordon had grown up in Buffalo and had a degree from the University of Buffalo. And we felt that there would be a lot of motivation on his part to personally participate in this. And that's what we wanted. We didn't want the firm per se. We always found out who would be the designer that would be put on it. And what was the real motivation that would make people work harder? As it turned out, in that particular case, they worked hard, but they carried on with what they've done, in my experience, a few some other times. And that was, they worked hard and produced what they thought was right, and from then on, nobody else could say anything else. And it had to just accept that. And Gordon was pretty difficult to listen to any other point of view.
Okay. How did your system work out for Stony Brook?
How do you pick
the campus?
Let me give one or two more anecdotes.
All right. Okay.
I had heard some people on the faculty of Columbia University saying they thought that, you know, the good people weren't getting enough reaction in terms of architectural assignments. So I said, well, I'll talk it over with you. Why don't you invite me to a faculty meeting of some kind where have some kind of a reception. We're popular.
Did they have a school of architecture?
Yeah, Columbia. It's had a school for a long time. One of the leading schools in the old Bozar Group, and still one of the leading schools. So I went and I talked, and I explained just what I've been saying to you, why we made these kinds of selections. And I said, in certain cases, younger architects with small firms come in, very interested in the works. We would like to include them in it, but they don't have the capacity to handle the first three or four big key buildings. At the same time, they don't have the relationship to the planning people. But I said, in some cases, for example, I had three come to me in the course of 2 days of interviews of this kind, who all were in that category, and then the third, and I kind of explained that. He said, maybe some of you could get together. And he said, well, who? And I said, well, for example, Edgar Taffel came in the other day, and this is Dick Smith, the other thing, and Ralph Miller came in this morning, and you're here now, and you're all in the same category, but you don't have the capacity to take on this job at this stage. So the next day I got a call from Dick Smitty and said, there's now a new firm called Taffel, Miller, and Smitty. And they are the ones that got Geneseo. Now, this was not just because they did that, but because I knew each of them, two of them well, and one I got to know in the course of the interview and so on, and I knew about it from other people. But I knew that they were at a point in their own careers where they're motivated to make a breakthrough in some more important thing. And they did a wonderful, wonderful job at Geneseo. I mentioned that at this Columbia meeting, and afterwards I noticed two or three of them over in the back of the room kind of talking together, and then they came over and talked to me. And there was Victor Christianer and Alex Kuzminoff, And there's a third one now. I forgot. Okay. Anyway, three of them said, we've just formed a new firm. And we were in the process of talking with different firms about Old Westbury. So we went that route there. And after a lot more talk and establishment of credentials and how they were organized and all the rest of the thing. Now, on Old Westbury, now, I think the timing of what of this assignment that you're speaking about, that was not going off campus. It was necessary to keep on going with some appointments, even while you stood back and made a new master plan based on a kind of a new look at the region and of what was there in the community and how it was going to be growing. So we allowed to join forces of the Damas, Picardi, and Weigel, all of whom I was familiar with, of work that they've done and where they came from and so forth.
They were all New Yorkers?
Yeah.
Where had they worked previously?
Well, Picardi, he was at that time on his own. He'd come from Europe, and I should know more about this. I don't have it in my head right now. I knew him pretty well, but I've forgotten a little bit now how he was, where he was. He was in one of the larger firms. Burke Weigel had been in Harrison's office, and Paul DeMoss had, both Paul DeMoss and Picardi had worked some at the United Nations, on the United Nations headquarters. And we were familiar with them in that connection, too. And I could look that up. I don't remember now myself exactly how that was.
They had a good reputation.
They had a good reputation. They were doing, solid, limited scale work, because they were only up to that point. And to take a fresh look at Stony Brook and to be willing to kind of pick up where it had gone that far and try with some imagination that to improve as it was brought together and try to make a real campus out of it. I felt at a point we were considering other groups and other firms, but I felt that they were the ones who would give us the best try, best shot on that. At the same time, I think there were some buildings which we had to kind of give specifically, even while waiting for this to come. And this was not the same kind of a case as a new campus where we'd want the firm to be able to do the three or four key buildings simultaneously to start it off. And I would guess that the Roth one, there were some cases where we selected firms that we thought could do a workmanlike job and a good job on a given building, who were wanting to work and yet didn't fit into that overall capacity.
Those are dormitories. Roth and Kelly Grease Griffin were both dormitories.
Those were separately, though.
Yes.
Right. So I think those were assigned to them because they were waiting and anxious and were had done state work, and they were both very solid, large, competent offices, and we felt that Barney Grusin was anxious to be involved.
Barney's.
Yeah, it's a different name. That was his nickname, so. There were cases like this in across the state, in one place or another, where there was a specific assignment that could be given somebody who was very anxious, as far as I was concerned, motivated to get, and that we felt would, based on the quality of the work they'd done, would fill in and to take the guidance and would produce the system.
The first assignment of Bell Hospital, Coney and White, remember which building?
Was it the Fine Arts? You mentioned the Fine Arts.
That's later.
There was one, I forgot, was it a student
union? Yes.
That they had?
They may have had it. But it was, it seemed to me that it had, the plans for it must have gone back pretty early because it was a student union for an institution of around 3,000 or something like that.
Yeah.
I remember our attempt while I was in charge to take a look at other student unions, other state institutions, and come up with suggestions of type of rooms and tolerances that we made it.
See, my memory begins to falter almost immediately as I was there getting it set up and running it and running that portion of it and getting it into place and with Adenolfi particularly getting the methodology that we would be following and how to handle this.
Yeah.
One thing, for example, was that just as you're saying on student unions, if 15 different campuses were having student unions being designed by different people, how best to not have them all repeat the same kind of research and go visiting and so forth, how to package that for them, and how to get the best. Now, there were some sort of new types of facilities, such as the teaching center, I think. There was a sort of
our lecture hall center.
Lecture hall center.
Whose idea was that?
This grew up in discussion in Albany, with led primarily by Tony, in my mind. And the obviously it was to try to find a new form of combining some of these things, and to find it so it would be in principle applicable to others. It wasn't to be a stock plan for it, but the principle on which it was based was to be researched out, you know.
Now, where would his files be?
Well,
he worked for you.
Yes.
Yeah.
They would be somewhere here and in whatever is the residual of the thing, or over in whatever archival position such files go to. Now, the person I mentioned to you was his secretary and administrative assistant, Barbara Pryor. And,
Where did I end up with my little black notebook?
Shoot.
Administrative.
I don't know. I'll put it downstairs. She and her husband, Peter Pryor, P-R-Y-O-R, live on State Street in Albany. And my brains are downstairs. My little black notebook with all my addresses. Wait a minute, I have one up there, I guess. Now, she was one of the very exceptional people in that kind of position that I've ever known, actually. She just was a very capable and thoughtful and intellectually organized. They live now at 319 State Street, which the zip is 12210, and the telephone is 436-9696. I'm almost sure. And I am sure that she would, if she wants to give me a call, you know, and she stayed on for quite a long time. And she's been in a couple of businesses of her own since that time. But she might be a help to you in finding where the Adenolfi stuff is.
Right. Okay.
Fine.
He died at, I think he was only 41. He, as you can see in the photograph, he was a smoker. Maybe he just smoked too much cigarettes, and they stumbled on black spots in his lungs, and 6 months later he died. It was a great, great loss. I think he was one of the really great people in architectural. And he was the one that helped the governor get Ed Loeb to come and set up UDC, the Urban Development Corporation.
UDC?
UDC, Urban Development Corporation. Yeah. Remember Ed Loeb, and that was all that.
Ed, L-O-W?
L-O-G-U-E.
L-O-G-U-E. Loeb.
He was the one that had been city planner, city development officer, urban renewal man at New Haven and did such a good job, and then went to Boston and did it there as well. And then he came on and he set up the UDC, which was the big state building operation, somewhat based on the construction fund, but on other kinds of buildings, and building things with private people as well, and building things for industrial development purposes and things of that kind. I'm just describing what an outstanding person Adam Alfie was.
Well, the university was fortunate then in having its facilities, planning, and leadership under Rockefeller and yourself and
Adam Alfie,
and having an evolution, apparently, from a relatively limited concept or limited appreciation of the job that needed to be done. An evolution from that stage up to a fully professional, broad-scale, national horizon.
I think that's right. The concept, you might say, in conceptual terms of what needed to be done, which the governor had and others who saw that, and it was a very compelling argument with the legislators, partly because of the decentralization idea, and because everybody knew that this was going to be a new university, piece of the university in their own senatorial district, et cetera, which is all to the good. It made a unanimity of support for this. Now, what needed to be done was known in sort of gross terms, but the development of the methodology to do it and the way of putting the best professional people the motivated professional people and how to give them the ability to be creative and to realistic. We had for many years in Sudan, we maintained building costs which on square foot or whatever computations you want to make were staying within the same kind of cost that had been achieved by the Public Works Department before. Those were kind of our benchmarks against which we had to be able to perform. And we, as far as while I was involved and knew the record, and even after that, I kept in touch with some of them, Steve and so on, they really kept to that kind of thing. So this was not going off into elaborate, expensive construction. Sometimes we had problems, sometimes there were labor problems, this, that, and the other, all the realities of that kind of work. But basically, we were staying right within it. So it was a fleshing out from the conceptual idea of what was needed into a staff. Frank Matsky was one that knew very much. He was one of Adnolfi's deputies,
and he loved it.
He's living down near Annapolis somewhere, I think. And I can try to find that out for you, but I've been out of touch with him a little while. Another guy who's in town in Albany is Grover Tarbox. He was one of Adnolfi's deputies, too.
How do you spell his name? C-A-R?
Tar from Tar.
T-A-R-B-O-X.
Greg Grover.
Grover.
Tar Box. And he's in town. Again, I have that in my little black book downstairs, so we can do that
as we go along.
He'd be a good one to talk to also. Mm-hmm. And either Frank Matsky or Grover or Barbara may remember more about the specifics of the
Stony Brook.
Stony Brook.
I've got a friend in Annapolis, a retired captain, and I'm going down south, starting at 20th, and I've got a Christmas card from them. They want me to stop by. I have a son in Washington, and we'll be staying with him, and I can look up Matsky.
Right. Let me see if I think I have enough to date. Some of these people, since I've been doing this stuff overseas and so forth, I haven't. I've been in touch with them. Huh. I seem to have some right there.
You got it downstairs.
Yeah, Grover may have that.
Okay.
How long do you think you'll be going along on this?
There's no deadline for it. I think that I can probably I'll
I'm going to be able to stay out here.
And